Hi, it's Rebecca Whitman, your host of the Balanced, Beautiful, and Abundant Show. I'm a top-rated life coach, an international best-selling author, and a multi-passionate entrepreneur. I'm on a mission to help you go from burned out to balanced, beautiful, and abundant. The experts on this show will help you achieve work-life balance so that you can experience abundance in seven pillars of life: spirituality, health, emotions, romance, mindset, social, and financial life. When you have all seven pillars of life in alignment, you are balanced, beautiful, and abundant. Let's go. Welcome, everyone, to the Balanced, Beautiful, and Abundant Show. I'm your host, Rebecca Whitman. We're helping you go from burned out and overwhelmed to balanced, beautiful, and abundant. Thank you so much for your loyalty. We have been on this journey together for 4 years, and because of you, your ratings, your reviews, you're sharing this with your friends, we are in the top 1% of all podcasts globally. So thank you so much for listening and being a part of this movement, teaching you that, hey, we can get results in life and we can be happy without the overwhelm and the burnout. And we all get to be happy. So let's talk about my guest today. Welcome to the show, Michelle Kapotz.
Thank you for having me.
So great to have you here. Let me tell my listeners about your amazing background. So Michelle is a coach, an international speaker and storyteller, and she is a mental wellness and resilience advocate. Her mental health essays have appeared in major publications like Newsweek, The Washington Post, and Marie Claire magazine, just to name a few. She serves on the board of Two Gear, a nonprofit focusing on mental health in Uganda. She is an executive committee member of the Global Mental Health Peer Network. She's on a mission to define what mental wellness means from the inside out. And her empathetic keynote speeches tackle many subjects from shame to self-worth, and they leave her audiences feeling connected and empowered. So really amazing work that you're doing in the world. I think that we're in a mental wellness crisis, and we have been since the pandemic, and a lot of people are depressed, suicide has gone up. So the work that you're doing is so valuable. Tell us, Michelle, about your journey. How did you get to be a mental wellness and resilience advocate?
So it's interesting. As I was listening to you introduce me, it still blows me away that I've been able to show people with my words that it's okay to have a mental health crisis. I'm amazed that I've been able to contribute to the mental health conversation on a global platform. But what I'm most proud of is that my life has transformed from someone who used to be so uncomfortable in her own skin into someone that I can truly love today. So my journey started when people first look at me. Mental illness doesn't look a certain way. When people first look at me, they often see someone who looks put together. My clothes match. A big joke is I'm always in 5-inch heels. I always wear heels. And I tend to carry myself with confidence. But what they don't know is I'm someone who's been crippled by mental illness and debilitating self-stigma. My journey began on a summer day in August 2005. Previously, it actually began a little before that, but previously, I had overcome a clinical depression that had me in bed for 2 months, but that was behind me. my life was back on track. I had just moved in with my boyfriend at the time, and we were talking about marriage. I worked at a national magazine, a dream job for this aspiring writer. I was checking boxes in my head. I could see that my life was just beginning. It was just taking off. But on this August day in the sweltering heat, I stood on the side of Interstate Route 68 in the sweltering heat. I could feel it on my face. And I was just listening to the of the cars that were whizzing by me, wondering, is anyone going to stop? I was wearing Tasmanian Devil boxer shorts, a t-shirt that was ripped all the way up to my left breast, that I was dabbing my forehead with to wipe the sweat. The gravel, the hot gravel pierced my bare feet. And in that moment, I thought the only thing I could do was something that I saw in the movies, and that stick out my thumb and strike a pose. I didn't know that that day was only going to be the beginning of my battle, not just with mental illness, but with shame. But what I've learned, what I know now, is how very resilient I am. I've learned that there's an I in illness and a we in wellness. I've learned that mental well-being, my mental well-being, has to be my number one priority. And it created a mission and a commitment in me to want to help others to do the same. But if
Beautiful.
I go back to that time in 2005, I was embarrassed. I was humiliated. People knew where I was and what had happened. I let that experience and my illness define me and become the very essence of who I was. My self-stigma and not feeling good enough seeped into every area of my life, from the men I was attracted to, the boyfriend and I had broken up, to the jobs that I went after, to my personal relationships. I thought it was all I had to offer someone. I didn't know that. I didn't know there was more to life. I became full of fear. And what I ended up doing is putting myself in a box. I thought I was broken.
And
And that box.
how did, sorry to cut you off, but I have so many questions to get into. I could hear your story all day. How did you find your mental wellness? Like I under thank you for sharing the story of how you felt. And I'm sure so many people can identify, but let's talk about your journey to empowerment and wellness. What was the shift?
So the shift for me when I got out of that place, and that's why it's so important to share our stories, is I met a woman who would become my mentor. And she taught me the power of an old war saying. And I didn't, she taught me how to run toward the sound of the cannon. And this woman was always meticulously dressed, not a hair was ever out of place. And when she spoke, it was with conviction and purpose. And I couldn't understand how that was possibly going to help me. But what she meant by it was run towards your fears, run towards those things that are holding you back. And until that time, I hadn't accepted my illness. I hadn't accepted myself.
And you were running away.
So
You were
I
running
was
away from the
running
fear.
away from everything.
So
And
you, the
she was
phrase,
encouraged, go ahead.
what was the phrase she said that changed your life?
Run toward the sound of the cannon.
I've never heard that phrase, and that means.
Run toward the sound of the cannon. It's an old war saying because soldiers are taught to run toward the fray. And when she said it, I couldn't imagine how that was possibly going to help me. But I listened to her when I stayed with her and I stuck with her. And when I chose to run toward my fears, I learned, I watched my life shift in that moment from mental illness to mental wellness.
Ooh, I like that. Mental healthness to mental wellness. So, how did you meet this mentor? Was she in a 12-step? Was she a therapist? Was she a coach? Like who was this woman?
She was my mentor. She was introduced by a mutual friend that knew about my struggles, and she had similar struggles, which surprised me because she didn't wear them like a dark cloud hanging over her head like I did. And that's what intrigued me. How do you get to that place where this is all okay and focusing on wellness? And that really started to change my life. And it made me really want to focus on that aspect. When it comes to, before we delve on wellness, I want to go back to mental health for one moment because
Sure.
I know a lot of your audience talks about overwhelm and burnout.
Yes.
And a lot of times when someone's struggling with a mental health challenge or stress or anything, they look for that the one thing. What is the one contributing factor that I can fix? And if we could just find that one thing, then everything would be okay. And in my experience, it's not one thing. It's a culmination of 12-hour days of not getting enough sleep, not prioritizing your self-care. In my situation, there were warning signs. I'd had a string of sleepless nights. I wasn't eating properly. But because I had been through a depression in the past, I refused to believe it could be happening again. So I pushed through and pushed through until that just didn't work anymore. So really, focusing on your mental wellness is what really has the opportunity to change all of that and impact your mental health in a big way.
Isn't it funny, Michelle, how not just women, but men, people, we don't want to admit we have symptoms. We want to push our symptoms away and push our symptoms away. And I know people who have actually died because they had physical symptoms that they didn't get treated in time by a physician or, by the right practitioner because people just do not want to admit that they are not well, either physical or mental wellness. So, in your opinion, what is the difference between mental health and mental wellness?
So I think that those two words get lumped together a lot by media. They are often used interchangeably, but I see a distinct difference between them. Mental health involves the diagnosis. It's often about medication or therapy or doctors. But mental wellness is the journey. It's an active lifelong process that helps us build resilience and grow. You don't need to have a mental health challenge to strive for mental wellness. For some people, it may look like eating right or getting enough sleep, those two things that we talked about before. But it's more than that for me. It's a complete alignment of the body and mind and an awareness of our thoughts. That's the biggest difference I see between the two. Mental wellness involves the whole person, mind, body, and spirit.
I love that because on this podcast and in my coaching, we teach that there are seven key areas of life. And when you have all seven areas of life in alignment, you are balanced, beautiful, and abundant. So that is exactly what you're saying. The seven areas are spirituality, physical, emotional, romantic, mental, social, and financial. And they're all connected together, and it's about getting your life aligned, not in just one or two areas, but looking at your life holistically. So that I totally agree with that. So part of your journey has been overcoming the self-stigma, which has led to self-doubt. If somebody does have a mental health diagnosis, how do they overcome the self-stigma?
So the self-stigma, there's so much talk about stigma, and as a society, I think we've come a long way. But there's not as much conversation about self-stigma. And I think there's a couple things that really help. And one is being mindful of the language you use. So many healers believe that whatever you put on the other end of I am, we tend to embody.
Yes,
And
I
I
agree.
believe that. So I never say, I am depressed. Instead, I'll say, I am someone who has depression. And just putting that small space around it, it's such a sh subtle shift. But when you do it repeatedly, it starts to make a big difference. So be mindful of the language you use when you're speaking about yourself. And the other goes along with that, and it's recognizing that your illness is only one part of you, only one part of all of the facets that make up the big, beautiful you. So writing them down, making a list, and handwriting when you do this is really important. Researchers have found that handwriting has similar effects in our brain, often found in meditation. So handwriting all of the things that make you you. Maybe I'm a sister, I'm a daughter, I'm a good friend, but break it down, go into the buckets. And if you have a problem doing that, ask your partner, ask your best friend, ask someone what they see in you, and then write that down and put it somewhere where you have to see it every day, somewhere where you're going to look at all of these things that make you you. And not just this one part of you. And that can be applied to a lot of different things. That helps with self-stigma. But if you think that you're overweight or you didn't get the client or the job that you wanted, really looking at every single part of you makes a really big difference. And the last one is the very hardest to do, and that's to practice self-compassion.
Yes.
That is being acknowledging that this moment, that what you're experiencing is difficult, and treating yourself with kindness. So many of us, and we alluded to this in the beginning, don't want to ask for help or admit the struggle, but we also, many of us tend to push it down with food or substances or shopping, anything to not feel what it is that we're feeling. But actually feeling it, and that can be done through mindfulness. And another, it's really interesting. Neuroscientists have found that it takes 90 seconds for a sensation, for a feeling to pass through the body. That's it, just 90 seconds. Anything more than that shows we're looped in the mind, that we're the ones that are reinforcing. Yeah.
So an
that
emotion
we
can
are
reinforcing.
Pass
in 90 seconds, but if we
exactly.
attach to it and build a story or a narrative around it, we go over it again and again. Do you want to know my biggest and best beauty secret? It is liquid collagen. I started drinking liquid collagen 3.5 years ago, and I am totally obsessed. I have never looked younger, fitter, leaner, stronger. My skin is glowing. My hair is thick and shiny. Eyebrows, eyelashes, nails, they're all growing, and I feel like I'm aging backwards. If you really want to know a huge hack to be balanced, beautiful, and abundant, you got to try this collagen. It is amazing. If you go to the show notes, you will get a $10 off coupon. If you buy 2 bottles, it's $25 off. And there's 2 versions. There's one for anti-aging and overall health. And there's another formula for fat loss. Both formulas are amazing. They taste great. And it's so easy to take. You just take a spoonful in the morning and a spoonful at night and just add it to your regimen. This stuff is off the charts. So make sure you go to the link in the show notes and grab yourself a couple bottles and tell me how much you love aging backwards. Thanks for watching the show, and we'll be back to our regular content now.
But if you feel it without the story or without the label, you'll notice that it starts to dissipate.
So how can people feel their feelings? Some people don't even know what that is. People, like you said, we shop, we gamble, we, you know, do alcohol and drugs, we do everything to avoid our feelings. How can people start to embrace their feelings and let them
There's
pass?
a lot of different things you can do to embrace your feelings. Somatic work is one of them. Body work. Some people may choose to do that with a therapist or with a coach. Some people need a guide to go through their feelings. Mindfulness is another way. Meditation, learning to observe the thought and not grasping onto it, but letting it pass and not making it mean something about you, is something else that's helpful. But it's practice is the bottom line. It's going to be uncomfortable the first time you allow yourself. If you are someone who's used to stuffing and stuffing and stuffing, it's going to be uncomfortable when you allow yourself to feel it. And that's where that self-compassion comes in, and recognizing it without judgment. That's the key, is without judgment, because what we judge, we get stuck with. But what we accept, what we choose, we accept.
Yes, I think radical self-acceptance is so important if we want to change. We have to accept it and just not judge ourselves for whatever it is, whether it's a negative emotion or a limiting belief or even a mental issue. Just ex we have to accept it first without judging ourselves. I feel like we're so harsh on ourselves.
Absolutely. We talk to ourselves, or let me speak for me,
Yeah.
in a way that you'd never talk to a friend. And it's that judgment that can turn into self-stigma. If I go back to that time when I had my crises, that feeling of shame and humiliation, I was afraid of the judgment from others, but no one at that moment could have judged me harsher than I was judging myself for.
Yeah.
And in that case, we and that goes back to we have a choice. We always have a choice as to how we're going to let these experiences affect us. Are we going to stay stuck in it like I did for a long time, or use it to grow and learn the lesson and become stronger and more resilient? We have that choice.
Yeah, we do. I had a mental breakdown in college. I did a fake suicide attempt. It was more of a cry for help, and it was a lot to not take on the stigma because it was very public and it was, at university, and yeah, so I walked a little bit of the path that you're talking about, and just not I am not, my actions. I like to say I am not what I have. I'm not what I do. I'm not my age, my height, my weight. Like I am not what other people think about me. Like we're so much more than the labels that we put on ourselves or a diagnosis. So I totally resonate with what you're saying. So how did you overcome the I'm not good enough conversation?
So I think that for me, it was with my own personal development work that I dove into, which is now what I'm so passionate in helping others through. But when you, and it was somatic work. It was
What does
doing a
that mean
bit.
for people who
So
are
soma
listening?
means body,
Okay.
and it would go into, with the 90 seconds, really feeling your feelings, allowing them to be present and feeling them all the way through. And when you truly are able to connect with your inherent worth, a diagnosis, a job, a relationship, that they aren't holding you back because you know they don't mean anything about you. You're able to separate yourself from the outside triggers and you can see a difference and see that it's just the mind acting up again. And that's the moment that everything shifted for me when I realized that and connected with my inherent worth. That's the moment everything shifted.
So, do you ever get snagged by thoughts
Of
of I'm not good
course.
enough?
Of course.
So
I'm
how do
not
you
good
handle
enough.
them? How do you handle them in real time?
I'm not good enough is looks like different things. It may look like for some people, I'm not successful enough, or I'm not smart enough, or I don't have enough of fill in the blank of whatever you don't have enough of. And of course, I still get in those moments of doing that, but I will tune in and allow myself to feel it. So not try to think. I used to, when that happened, I would either, my MO used to be to shut down or to isolate. I used to be someone that was a big isolator. I used to isolate a lot, or try to avoid it. But the biggest thing that has helped me is acknowledging it and feeling it. And whether that's by allowing it to pass, writing and processing it through my journal, those are big things that have helped me. But that fear still comes up. Not feeling worthy can still come up. And I think the difference is now I have tools to use and it doesn't come up as much. With practice, when it does, I know how to handle it. So it's gotten easier when it comes up. It doesn't consume me like it used to. That's where I think the difference is.
I agree with you. Journaling has been my number one tool to overcome self-doubt and just to overcome any kind of limited thinking, old narratives. Like, I really am a huge believer in the magic of writing things down, getting them out of our brain onto the paper. It takes the power out of old thought patterns. So I am a huge, huge advocate of journaling. I have all my clients journal. So what does mental resilience mean to you?
So mental resilience, I had a life coach. I'm a coach who always has a coach.
Yes.
And I had a life coach. It was my very first life coach who called me resilient. And I didn't know much about the word, and I certainly didn't know that it was something to be proud of. I thought that I didn't know much about it, but we hear a lot that resilience is overcoming hardship, that's the biggest definition that we hear a lot, overcoming hardship or getting through things, bouncing back. But I heard the definition and I've grasped onto it. And what it means to me is bouncing forward. And it's
Ooh,
like I
bouncing
said,
forward. I like that.
It's what I said earlier. It's realizing you have that choice and using it to propel you forward and not hold you back, learning the lesson each time and applying that to how you can move forward in your life from that space. That's the biggest thing it means to me. And again, with resilience, I will say that that too is practice. I don't think that we are born resilient. I think it's a skill that we hone with practice, but I also strongly believe it's a choice.
I really believe that resilience is how fast you bounce back, because life gets lifey. Stuff is always going to be happening because, you know, that's just what life is. There are circumstances that are negative and circumstances that are positive, but how fast we bounce back from the negative is resilient. So I really like the definition of bouncing forward instead of bouncing back, taking the lesson, learning it, and then using that to move forward. Because once we grasp that there is no failure, only lessons, it really takes the pressure off.
Yeah, and we get I also like the saying that failure is just feedback. That failure is just feedback in there is no failure. It's just information. It's feedback into how to move forward, what to do next, what not to do again. It really comes down to our perception and the lens in the way in which we choose to view these things. And back then, my lens was distorted. I wasn't seeing clearly. My perception of everything was off and negative. And now that lens has been wiped, and I'm able to reframe or re-examine things and look at it from a different perspective, which has made a big difference.
Yeah, failure is feedback, and feedback is always a gift. I know a lot of my fear was fear of criticism. If I couldn't do anything perfectly, I didn't want to do it. I'm a recovering perfectionist, and now I know that even negative feedback is a gift because feedback means that we're learning. And if somebody gives us feedback, even though sometimes negative feedback is painful to receive because we're sensitive and we have egos and our feelings get hurt, but once we really take the emotions out of it, feedback is always a gift and it's just information. We don't have to make it like, be the, be all end all of ourselves just to have feedback. And also what other people think about us is none of our business. Like I've had to learn that people can have their own opinion of me, and it doesn't mean that that is my opinion of myself, and it doesn't mean that that is my higher power's opinion of me. It's just that one person's opinion.
Absolutely. And I think that some of that, I think some of that gets easier with age.
Yes.
That so when I was experiencing all of this, I was in my 30s, and it was still very, I would be humbled by what people thought of me. It was still very important to me. And I think as we grow and as we evolve, we settle more into who we are, and it becomes less important of how you're received. If your intentions are good and you're kind and your intentions are good, it's not as important as it once was, or as it was in my 30s, I will say.
And just like working out, I think these are muscles, building your resilience muscle. How fast do we come back from a setback? Building the I don't care about what people think muscle. I mean, and the only way to build a muscle is to break it down so that it, rebuilds and gets stronger. So these are things that come with age, and they also come with mindfulness, knowing like, okay, this stings because my ego's hurt because somebody, doesn't like me or they gave me negative feedback, and I have a choice. I can choose to not care about what they think, to take the feedback for what it's worth. Maybe it's a learning experience, and then to know that it only matters what I think about myself and what God thinks about me. So I, that is a muscle. I would say out of a lot of my soul lessons, not taking things personally has been such a big lesson for me.
Absolutely. And it is a muscle, and it's looking at the feedback. So it's having the courage. Someone doesn't like you, or someone says something about you, or your ego gets offended. It's looking at the feedback honestly and doing an honest assessment of yourself. Is this true? Is it true? If it is, and it's something I need to work on, then I accept that. But if it's not, it has no place here. So it's taking that feedback and assessing it, and then moving on from it one way or the other.
Yes, I totally agree. Now, what are some daily habits that we can all be doing to promote our mental wellness?
So there's a couple things, and the biggest one for me was my biggest struggle. It took years for me to be able to meditate because I couldn't quiet my mind. I thought it meant my mind had to be completely empty, and I thought I had to sit in the lotus position, and I had this whole picture of what meditation looked like, and I was failing that picture. But what I learned, during that time, I went to a meditation class, and I loved the class. It was a 20-minute guided meditation by candlelight in the dark. It was this great class, but someone would walk in late, and my eyes were always wide open, waving at them, "Come over here, sit here." It wasn't working. But in that class, I heard someone talk about nature as a form of meditation, a walking meditation. And I realized the next day walking my dog that my mind was completely silent. And that worked for me for a number of years. Meditation looks different for everyone. For some, it may be prayer. For some, it may be breathing. For some, it may be quiet moments. After using nature, I got into guided meditations. And right now, I'm trying to do silent meditations, which is a really big challenge for me. But with practice, it's getting better. So, meditation, whatever that looks like for you, is a big one. The other one, and I loved it so much, I got certified as a facilitator, and that's tapping. Tapping has been something that I love to do after my meditation as part of my mental wellness routine. And that may be tapping on self-confidence
So explain to
or
the audience what tapping means in case they don't know.
Sure. So, emotional freedom technique, EFT, which is commonly known as tapping, is a self-help tool, a stress reduction tool, and it balances the energy systems of the body. Some people have called it a psychological acupuncture because it uses your fingertips instead of needles on the nine meridian points of the body found in Chinese medicine. So you go through movements on your face and on your body, and you repeat the phrase as you do it. You begin with tapping out a negative emotion and then tapping in a more positive one. And you usually do this for three or four rounds. I've led tapping groups, and I think it can be so powerful. And my mood always, I'm always higher. My vibration is always lifted after I do a tapping session. So I might tap on self-confidence or self-doubt or tap to connect with my resilience. So start by saying, but you always start on the negative emotion. You want to bring up the negative emotion to release it. So if I was tapping on resilience, I'd say, even though I'm not certain, even though I'm unsure of myself, or even though I'm full of fear, I deeply and completely love and accept myself. And that's always, you always repeat that or a variation of that. And then you go through the tapping technique to tap in the positive emotion. And tapping EFT, there's hundreds of videos on YouTube that have a variety of ways to practice EFT, but it's also being used more structurally in the by mental and mental health professionals. Athletes use it before a game. It's even been used in the classroom. So there are many positive benefits of tapping, and even tapping on this is right under your collarbone, but even this movement of tapping on your chest can help bring ground you and bring you back into the moment at a time when you're feeling overwhelmed. So I love tapping.
Well, that's great. So where on you tap in the middle of your clavicle or on one
You
clavicle?
tap under, so this movement is under, usually under the collarbone. So right like here, if I'm doing it with one hand, I usually use two fingers when I tap. I like to use two fingers. But again, even so, if I'm in, for example, if I'm in public and I don't have, I may look silly if I start going like this or like this or even like this. I may very quietly just start doing this, which helps calm me.
Got
You
it.
can do that anywhere.
So, if you had a billboard on the side of the highway with one phrase that you could share with the world as our last question, what would that billboard say?
I obviously want to say run toward the sound of the cannon, but that's too easy. So I don't want to pick that because that's a too easy one. I think the biggest is keep going. You never know what the next day is going to hold. In those moments when you feel like the world ended, or in those moments where you feel down or defeated, to just keep going, that you never know. Tomorrow is a new day, and you never know what's going to happen. And it's that possibility that we have, the possibility of the future. That is so exciting. So I think it would be broken down into just keep going.
And that is a perfect message to end with. So, if anybody is listening to this podcast, if you're feeling down, depressed, defeated, even suicidal, get help. There are mental health hotlines, there's coaches like Michelle, and just keep going. Don't give up because you don't want to make a permanent decision to a very temporary problem. And things are constantly changing. Every day is a new beginning, and anything could happen. Anything can change. So just keep going and be open to the miracle. So, Michelle, how can people stay in touch with you?
So you can find me on my website, which is michellekapotz.com. And I'm a 1L Michelle. People always want to put two L's in there. I'm a 1L Michelle. So michellekapotz.com. And then also on Instagram, which is michellekapotz.com spelled out. So DOTCOM spelled the words literally spelled out. michellekapotz.com. Those are the two biggest ways to find me.
And if you're listening to this when the podcast comes out, you might be listening to it at another time, but tell us about what's happening in May.
Yes, so I have a keynote. There's a conference, the Pathways to Wellness Conference. It's the 23rd 10th annual Pathways to Wellness Conference. In if you're in the DC area, it's in Northern Virginia to support mental health recovery. And I'm the keynote speaker at that conference. It has tons of different workshops on mental health and resilience. The theme is hope and resilience. So if you're in the Northern Virginia, DC area and you want to attend, send me a DM or send me a message and I'll give you all the information.
Thank you so much, Michelle, for being my guest on the Balanced, Beautiful, and Abundant show. Thank you, listeners. If you know anyone who is struggling with mental wellness or mental health, and I think we all do know someone, go ahead and copy and paste this link to this podcast. You can listen to it on all major podcast platforms. Share the show. This show might just be the turning point in somebody you care about's life. And if you could take 30 seconds out of your incredibly busy day, because I know we're all busy, and if you could leave a 5-star review and subscribe to the show, we can keep growing this movement, showing people that, hey, life is short. You don't have to go through life overwhelmed, burned out, exhausted. You can be balanced, beautiful, and abundant. Thank you for tuning in to another wonderful episode of the Balanced, Beautiful, and Abundant podcast. My name is Rebecca Whitman. I'm your host. And until we meet again, keep your vibe high and magnetized. Bye, everyone. Thank you so much for listening to another amazing episode of the Balanced, Beautiful, and Abundant podcast. It's your loyal listening that makes our show top 0.5% in the world. I would love to connect with you in person. We're having our second international retreat October 3rd through 6th in Belize. If you like yoga, sound baths, and want to get all seven pillars of abundance to a level 10, this retreat is for you. Just go to the link tree in the show notes to snag your $200 off promo code before April 15th. And let's end the year 2024 with momentum so that going into 2025, you will have so much abundance in all areas of life that you will be setting yourself up for the most incredible year ever. It is going to give you something to look forward to all year. Make sure you snag your spot before April 15th. And if you have any questions, you can always email me at RebeccaElizabethWhitman.com. My email address is on my website. Thank you so much for your loyal listening. And we will see you on the next episode. And some of you lucky ladies, we'll see you in Belize. Bye.